What is happening? Welcome to the Craft Pitching Podcast. I'm your host, Nick Pollock, joined fortunately this week, unlike every other week, by Ian Osaris. Ian, good to see you, man.
Yeah, good to see you too. You got a fresh, you're freshly shorn.
Shorn indeed. and you are freshly dapper.
This is the wet look.
It's a good look. And well, I mean, I understand because you've been going through a lot with spring training. You're back home for a moment, but you, of course, it's a very busy time. And what we're going to do today is just pretty much guys that we've changed our opinions on a little bit throughout the spring. Some new information that we've got that says, you know what, maybe I'm actually a little bit more high on this guy or that guy, or just interesting things we've seen. And last time we talked, you were going to talk to Shane Bieber. And I was really curious about that one because we don't have any hard data on it. The last start I saw, he threw 93 twice to get out, guys. That's what they said on the broadcast. Mm-hmm. But I got nothing else. And what did he tell you?
Big deal was just he thought it was really useful to change at the type of his career, just almost for change's sake. Like, he was talking about how just having the intention to do something different, like, felt like a recommitment to his career. And that alone was going to help him. But he said he had learned a lot of things. And one of the things he learned was that his curveball had changed over time last year.
Yeah.
And, you know, he was kind of surprised by that. But it had something to do with him just trying to, he sort of felt like he was losing it. And he was just trying to, like, get the same movement. And as in that effort of trying to get that same movement back, he sort of lost his curveball, his old curveball grip. And, you know, what happened is he got more horizontal over time. And he said, I'm a vertical pitcher. You know, I'm like, you know, right-ish and then like, you know, power slider. And then the curveball has to come down off that. And we agreed that, like, if you're vertical and then you've got this curveball that has sideways, then the hitter can, like, sort of keyhole that. And be like, oh, curveball. You know, it's like, it's moving in on me. Nothing else he does is moving in on me like that.
Right.
And so that, you know, it lets them have, like, a really clear strategy. Like, if you can see the curveball, then you either have auto take or auto hit or whatever it is, you know, but you can, whatever it is, it's not good that, like, someone can see it right away. And that's something we saw in our discussion with Bryce Miller. And so I'm just taking that sort of background to two pitchers that I've been watching. And one pitcher that's really just screaming up my draft boards is Joe Ryan.
Yes.
And, you know, one of the reasons is I think a splitter is better this year.
I agree.
You know, the numbers are better. The velo is better. A lot of the aspects of the splitter are better. And then I think we've talked about him before, where he's, like, struggling to find the right slider for him. And so in the context of what we just said, I'm a little surprised that this is the right slider, but it's harder. And maybe that's the whole picture. But he's basically, I think, throwing a death ball. Because what he's doing is he's put a spike grip on his gyro slider.
Is that right? Oh, my gosh.
And so gyro sliders are known for having inefficient spin. They're not supposed to turn spin into movement. They're also called a bullet slider, right? And they're supposed to just be like, zoop. And they're known.
Everyone can see that what he just did.
It's just a zoop. His hand, zoop. And they're like, they can be 88, 89, 90. You know, they're like getting close into the cutter realm. They're sort of in between that and bigger sliders. But by putting that spike grip on that, he's actually turned it into one plane movement. And so it has 17 inches more drop than his four-seam fastball. But here's the weird part. It doesn't have much glove movement. So
that's fantastic.
It's very up and down. But it's interesting in the context of the rest of his arsenal, because he's actually a two-plane guy.
Oh, with his four-seamer movement?
Yeah, his four-seam is kind of like up and.
Yeah. You know? I mean, you sometimes see that a lot with the lower arm-angled guys, right? They're getting a little bit more on the side of the ball, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And and his splitter has arm side movement. He has a sweeper otherwise, and he has a big sinker. So he doesn't throw very often, but he's got one. So there's a lot more sort of east to west on all the pitches except that one. I don't know.
Oh, I love it.
I think I like it because, first of all, the split finger being back, I think, is a big deal. He's searching for a secondary pitch. Then what I also like about this new slider is it's 86. And so what he can do is throw 93 up in the zone. He's a high lock guy.
Yes, he is. Oh, he's such a good high lock guy.
Is he the high lock guy?
I mean, he's like 96th percentile.
Yeah, yeah.
Totally. Him and Bailey Ober are just like absurdly pristine at it. Yeah. And he's so flat. He is one of the flattest four seamers out there too, as far as like a height adjusted VAA.
Yeah, he's one of those ones that's important. It's really important not to look at raw movement because of his release point being so.
Yep, 100%. And actually, on that topic, really quickly, I found a lot that height adjusted VAA speaks better to performance upstairs, and I think just generalized IVB or vert. Mm. And I'm starting to favor that a little bit more because, like, the vert on Joe Ryan's four seamer doesn't really whatever, but
like if you had a 10-foot guy.
Yeah.
Who had 20 IVB, it would still come into the zone. Like,
right. Yeah, exactly. Flat. It would still, right. Exactly. It'd be really like, whoa. Okay.
When you start talking in like real extremes, you can kind of sort of picture it.
Yeah, exactly.
And if you had a 3-foot,
really, really good point. Yeah.
You got a 3-foot guy.
You meant actually he's 10 feet tall. Yeah. Not like,
yeah. And if you had like a 3-foot tall dude who had like, 15 IVB.
It doesn't matter. It's still going to be
it's
that.
It's still going to be like coming up at you.
Right. Great point. Yeah. So, I mean, the one that taught me that was Zach Wheeler, who I think has one of the most effective four seamers out there. And he doesn't have a ton of vert, but it's a very flat. And it's also a very flat height adjusted VAA. And it's also a really good extension. And those paired, obviously coming in at 96 is like, well, yeah, IVB, I don't care. Your vert, whatever. Like, this is so good. And Ryan is absolutely one. It's interesting, though, because he had allowed 19 home runs last year on his four-seamer. Because those that weren't actually upstairs, now it's just a bad fastball.
Mm.
Right? Because that being flat is only good when you actually get it upstairs.
Yeah, he's like, he can do high, like zone, too. Like, it's
right.
Like the bottom of the top third of the zone.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
that's
yeah.
not a good place to live. And that's where his homers are. And his homers, actually, if you put them on, they look kind of like just high middle.
Right, exactly. So like he needs to actually truly be up for it to work.
But you don't always get those called strikes up there. So
100%,
sometimes
which is why
a called
it's so
strike,
important.
You got
to
come
this
back.
This is why I love his new slider because I don't want that to be a whiff pitch. I need that just to get strikes.
You get it in the zone.
Yeah.
He needs a strike.
And then the splitter had to be the strike pitch last year. And now what I saw yesterday, which is great against the Tigers, it went 4 innings, 6 strikeouts. What I loved about it was the splitter wasn't in the zone. It was right underneath it. So he got a good number of whiffs.
And the
there.
Slider was low zone.
Right. And those were low. It's funny. He got 4 whiffs on his sliders, that is sweeper and the new slider.
Mm-hmm.
All of them were from Javi Baez.
But you saw that he was using it in hitters counts.
Yeah. Now he was utilizing it as you should. Exactly.
Yeah.
So,
and I also like the fact that you've got, with the splitter and the slider, you've got very similar vertical movement and very similar velo.
Mm-hmm.
But 10 inches, 14 inches different. Side to side.
Yeah.
So you can play with it side to side too, where, somebody's expecting a splitter and the ball doesn't move, 14 inches is you can play with that side to side.
And what's also interesting is I didn't see a single sinker yesterday.
I've got 8 labeled in here for spring training, but,
you threw two in a previous one. And I honestly think that the sinker can actually be really effective for him just again to make it so that when guys are seeing something that stays up, that
it could also be mislabeled.
Yeah.
Because it's pretty similar to his four seam, but just a little bit more down.
Sure. But yeah, I mean, Joe Ryan, after that game yesterday, because I've been looking for that, I've been looking for something new in the breaking side so that he didn't have to rely on the splitter inside the zone, and not only to see that new breaker, but also the splitter not being a zone pitch. And of course, it's another tick up again for Joe Ryan, which is just helpful. It's not 93 now instead of 92.
You have, how many innings did you throw last year?
I want to say 160.
I'm into that. Aha. This is, you know, it's funny. We talk a lot of advanced stats in here and you know, they're great, but one of the strongest ones ever.
61.2, so close.
One of the strongest ones ever is strikeouts minus walks.
Yeah.
Last year, minimum 100 innings, Spencer Strider, Tyler Glasnow, Joe Ryan. So yeah.
You want to know something fun?
I was like, all he has to do is figure out that 1.8 homers per nine, and he's improving his secondary pitches. So he's kind of been zooming up, especially with like all the injury information you have, like sort of there's downward movement from people. All the people were getting hurt and moving down, and that's giving him sort of places to kind of,
right.
I'm going to take him up. That guy's hurt. he's got a big up arrow in my ranking.
So something I actually made a mental note to talk to you about this week that I completely forgot about until you say K minus walk rate is I mentioned this on the stream earlier this week. On Saturday, I was in bed. And I came up with a new stat, and I got to tell it to you. Okay. Okay. I just dawned on
tower in bed.
And that's just what happened. Exactly. Right. You're just thinking, oh my God. And I had its revelation. And so we have strike minus ICR rate, which we really like as like a whip stat, right?
Uh-huh.
And it predicts whip better in the next year than whip itself, which is really cool. Mm-hmm. It sounds like I'm quoting like FDR or something like that. You know, the only thing to whip is whip itself. Okay. But that's fun. But then again, it doesn't really reward strikeout guys. So it's just like I'm throwing strikes and then I'm inducing weak contact. Mm-hmm. So I realized, well, what if I included swing strike into this and say, because essentially I'm trying to do is saying you throw really good strikes, right? That's the best thing you can do as a pitcher is you have a high strike rate and then you don't get damaged on it. But then I also want you to have a high strike rate and also get strikeouts, right?
Also because swing strike rate stabilizes faster than called strike rate.
It absolutely does. Yeah.
You know, theoretically stuff is a little bit stickier. So maybe this swing strike rate.
So my initial one, and I'm working with Kyle now to get all the weights right to a place that we think is really good, is essentially on the pitch level. So ICR rate is on the batted ball event. However, we just essentially divided how many you have over pitches to make it like a per pitch one too. So we do strike rate minus 2x ICR plus 2x swing strike rate to create a new stat called stud rate. Strikes that utterly dominate.
Nice.
And of course, what do you know? We have CSW last year correlating future year K minus walk rate at correlation of 59, R squared of 69 for stud rate for to K rate, and then 68 to K minus walk rate.
Nice.
So that's kind of encouraging for us.
To itself, though.
Right. And Joe Ryan is, I think, a 10th in this from last year.
Nice.
It's but Bailey Ober is 6th. So just saying. But that's a really
Let's
fun
think one. Bailey Ober into each about. One.
Actually, you know, I even take that back. The one I came up with, Joe Ryan's 5th and Bailey Ober's 4th. There's an alternate one that Kyle did that lowered the emphasis of strikes. That has the other one I mentioned. But I mean, it's Spencer Strider, Luis Castillo, Pablo Lopez, Bailey Ober, Joe Ryan, Freddie Peralta, Max Scherzer are the tops of this. So pass the eye test. And then you have Connor Crawford and Hunter Green and Shohei Ohtani and Zach Wheeler. That's stud rate. I'm excited for it. I hope it's good. We're going to test it. You might never hear about it again because you're going, not worth it.
Yeah.
But this is just the fun stuff that we're always working on here. And you're absolutely right. Joe Ryan, like looking better from before. And also already having that K minus walk rate, that was good.
Yeah.
I'm a fan. It's like small potential of Matthew Boyd. Like small, like high strikeout, low walks, but all the home runs that he used to have, which is the importance of that third pitch.
I think home runs is like, home runs are really hard to predict and project. Mm-hmm. And there's so much noise in them. And I was thinking about like, you know, that new stat from Savant about like the biggest misses.
Mm.
And I think home runs are like the smallest misses, if that makes sense. Because, I mean, they're not even a miss, but like,
yeah.
The biggest miss, and they sort of rolled this out, this biggest miss. And I think our first intention when we look at it is, oh, this is a pitcher stat. Because they're attaching to the pitcher. They say Sam Hinkes threw the pitch with the biggest miss. And what they're meaning is the difference between where the bat is and where the ball is. And so somebody, I forget who it was that swung, but somebody swung at a Sam Hinkes curveball so early because they were sitting on the 95 on their fastball that they missed the ball by 4.8 feet. And my first inclination is this is about the pitcher. It's not about the single pitch at all.
Yeah. Nope.
I don't think. I agree with you. It could be about tunneling and sequencing. Because that batter obviously thought that a fastball was coming.
Yep.
But it could also just be about the batter.
Yeah, it totally is the batter.
Like, when is he guessing? What counts is he guessing in? How is he guessing? So I think that is a great stat that's going to maybe lead to some stuff, but we need a lot more context. But if you just think of the opposite of the biggest miss, it's a homer.
Yep.
Because he guessed correctly and he got the barrel to the right spot and like he hit the homer. And so if guessing and or sequencing or anticipation is part of the biggest miss, then it follows, I think, that guessing or anticipation is part of the smallest miss. And so there might be some sort of home run relationship between how you sequence, strategy, how wide your arsenal is, you know, that sort of deal.
I would be so interested to see like the smallest actual misses.
Yeah, like, I guess it would be like it would be millimeters and be like the sweet spot.
The whiff. Well, you know, even like the whiffs.
Oh, the smallest. Yeah.
The whiffs that were the smallest, you know.
Those might be dominant pitches because they might have guessed correctly and still missed.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
So there's this anticipation. There's this role of anticipation and guessing. And I think that it's a little bit more than the average fan thinks. I think the average fan thinks that the hitter can see more than they can see.
Oh no, I agree with you completely. They don't. There's so much about like what you're expecting, you're selling out for.
Yeah, and what you're looking for, quote unquote.
Right.
You know, and so Joe Ryan saying like, okay, well, you were looking for my fastball a lot, and I gave it to you, and that's why I gave up 1.8 homers for 9. Just any sort of level of trust that he has in his other pitches.
Well, right. Yeah.
Will lead to fewer homers because they're going to guess more wrong more often.
Yeah, I could not agree more. And I think the comparison to Matthew Boyd makes a lot of sense in my head because it was same kind of velocity fastball too, which would then suggest that when it's not located well, the margin of error is lower and they're still guessing and they're guessing correctly,
but then it's easier to get to it.
Right. And that makes it more of a home run thing, right? And no, actually, I sent you that secret document, right? My super secret.
Oh, the sequencing. That's right.
Yeah, the snake oil of baseball.
Yeah.
And part of that is, y'all don't know this. I won't ever publish this, I'm pretty sure, because like, I feel that there's a lot of subjectivity when it comes to what sequencing is and what's good about it and everything. And I imagine if I put this kind of thing out, I know that there are a lot of holes in it. Because
and people would be like, oh, the numbers don't support this or that.
Yeah, all this kind of stuff. And I totally get it. And it's why I'm just kind of like, these are thoughts that I have, and I want to just have these conversations.
Mm-hmm.
And what's really fun about that document for me is it's a lot of the things that I can see at times. It's not for everybody. Like first and foremost, it assumes A, that the pitcher has at least like an average, if not above average command. Mm-hmm. Like they're able to actually execute a pitch, you know? And the second is that the hitter is not an all-star hitter. Like the Mookie Betts rule is what I call it. If you throw one thing past Mookie Betts, you shouldn't throw it a second time in the same spot because he's going to adjust and beat you now. Right. But for like the blanket, like it's that whole bell curve, right? You have the middle. it does apply. And it's a lot about, you can essentially, you have so many tells from moments, game states, to how batters swing and how they make contact when it's foul, how they react after the play as the ball comes in. There are a lot of tells, in my view, for what they are looking for. And generally, hitters don't change what they look for. Like, some try and get in their own head and like say, okay, cool, this one I'm going to look for this, this I'm going to look for that. It's like, no, this is the at bat where I look for this, mm-hmm. right? And you're giving a thumbs down. Some of this is the funniest thing. It's only Eno's. My camera never
even
does
do
this.
Anything.
Yeah. You just shook your head with your hands clasped. Yeah. No. But it's really interesting at times where like batters will tell you they are absolutely fastball hunting and just surviving on a breaking ball. But because a lot of pitchers go, well, I just threw in the breaking ball, so I have to throw, you know, I just got to go back to the fastball now. And then they'll crush them on the fastball. It's like, oh my God, it drives me insane. So I'm very much in your boat that guys are guessing a ton. And then there's like Jose Ramirez, who's just like, no, I'm just so good at this game. And I am like, just see ball, hit ball, and that's fine.
I think you do have to change it up sometimes because, especially if you've seen like the postseason, or there's times when hitters are like, yeah, I didn't see a single fastball.
Right.
And they'll just notice, oh, it was just slider.
Well, right.
So different at some point, you have to be like, okay, I'm going to sit slider this time.
The rule is you kind of don't, if they showcase one thing, there are certain moments they say, okay, cool. Like first two strike count should be it's always going to be a breaking ball. Generally the first pitch in a two strike count, higher chance now for a secondary pitch and not the fastball, especially if the previous pitch was a fastball, mm-hmm. right? So it actually can be really sneaky with that and throw a fastball sometimes in a different location and just completely blow them past whatever.
That's sort of the rise of the high fastball in a way.
Right.
Like another thing I can throw that's totally different than when you expected.
Yep.
0-2 count, high fastball.
Top and then the rule is, okay, 0-2, you throw a slider down away. You see that they follow it. Aha, I knew that was going to happen. But if you do what I call the gambit, you throw two of those in a row. They think they've earned a fastball again now because you just did that one. You're going to get one back. If you do a second time, you execute it. Usually that does work. 3-2 counts, they look for fastballs instead of secondaries. So then you can throw the Cole Reagans 3-2 changeup, and it's the most glorious thing ever. Like, there are generalized rules. And once a batter showcases, hey, no, I made a good swing on a good pitch, now has been great. No, not throwing that one again. Right. And, there are those rules that I'm very much with you of like, batters are not that great to be able to pick it up and see ball, hit ball. It's like stupid impossible. And with Joe Ryan, you're 100% right that like, if they aren't just sitting fastball, and I think we talked about before that the splitter was hittable enough that even if when they were sitting four seamers,
and he was trying to throw it in the zone because you'd want to throw something other than the fastball. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm loving this version of Joe Ryan completely. And he's going straight at my draft board now. Yeah. I just put on my rankings like 2 days ago. I'm already changing this. Oh my gosh. Someone else this spring, I'm curious where you're at with him. Which one do I choose? Okay. Where are you on the Red Sox right now with Garrett Whitlock and Tanner Houck? Garrett Whitlock to me is a little bit scary because I found myself realizing I was looking for 2022 Garrett Whitlock. And what I've seen so far is fewer changeups and fewer sliders than I like, especially whiffable ones. Lance Brzozowski put out a great post on his Substack about the extension difference between 2022 and 2023 Garrett Whitlock. And we don't know yet if that's back, but it's highly unlikely. And I'm not going to assume that he's all of a sudden 7+ extension again, which would be elite. So I haven't really seen amazing Garrett Whitlock, save for one game that he apparently had 6 strikeouts that I got no data or video on. Yay, thank you so much.
And the other day,
yeah. Oh my God. Why? It's the worst thing ever. But the slider's not present right now. And that used to be the thing.
Yeah.
So I'm a little worried about Garrett Whitlock. I'm kind of curious where you are.
Yeah, that was something that we also saw last year in Stuff Plus was just an absolute down arrow on all of his stuff. But in particular, the one thing that he still had was the sweeper, according to this. And when I'm looking at his spring training numbers, there's nothing I would call a sweeper.
Mm.
He's saying he has a curveball with 6 inches glove side movement. That's not a sweeper. And then it's right. saying he has a cutter that goes 86 and has less drop than a sinker. I guess that makes sense, but it's not like, I don't know. It's not a good number.
No, it's just a bad number.
It's a bad number.
Yeah, it doesn't even look like it's part of the alphanumeric language.
It's just, yeah, like I'm struggling to understand this number.
It's satanic.
Let me do without gravity. Does that make more sense? Okay. No. Yeah. Okay. It's, I don't know. This is weird. At 93.9 is good.
Yeah.
But I would say that a pitcher with this profile would have a really hard time against lefties because his primary pitch is a sinker.
Well, right. So that's why the changeup was a big deal for Whitlock. Like that was a 20% plus swing striker constantly. And to see in this last outing, they kind of wasn't really doing that. I mean, I know that the Red Sox as a whole have been leaning more into cutters. And he experimented also with the curveball a lot more in this one. And he had some cutters. But like, Whitlock, dude, you were so good against lefties because you have this changeup that goes down and away super effectively. 2022, your sinker was actually like a 17% swing strike rate against lefties up and in. And you had that. And you love that. I know you do. Upstairs sinkers and inside. So where is that? And I'm not seeing it. And I think I was assuming that post-injury, Whitlock would get there. And on the other side of it, there's Tanner Houck. And I was curious if you had anything on him because I've got nothing. Like literally, I'm just waiting to find out anything about Tanner Houck. All I've heard is whispers that he's throwing harder than this year and surprising people in camp or whatever. I've been waiting for him to have a proper lefty weapon. And I got
I just
nothing.
Looked him up on Savant and it has one pitch in here. How could I have one pitch? And it's a pitch, and it's a pitch out. But like, what is this I'm looking at? Yeah, I have the same thing where I just have, you know, his manager saying he looked good coming into the spring.
Ooh, and then, wow. All right. Up my board.
Some, you know, like he had better velo than others.
Right.
One thing that I do like that I also heard was that he's working on his cutter. And
well, I hope so, because that's always the nullifier.
Yeah. I mean, that's what he needs because he's a sinker guy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I was trying to understand Whitlock's cutter because he's a sinker guy.
Right.
I mean, the fact that he threw a cutter last year 181 times at least and that he located it by location plus above average and that he seems healthy and the velo's up. It's enough for me to some extent because he's like, I can't say this about Whitlock, but I can say about Houck. He definitely has the arsenal to dominate righties.
Yeah.
I mean, his sinker and slider from his slot is going to be really, really hard on righties.
Yep.
Now teams are always going to, you know, try to stack the lineup with lefties. And last year he located his split finger and cutter well. But they were really low stuff pitches. And split finger is like an awkward one, like we just discussed with Joe Ryan. Split finger is an awkward pitch to be
depending on. Oh, yeah, a lower arm slot, too. Yeah, and that, yeah, not, and called strikes as well. Like lower arm slot guys, when you think about a splitter, it's always best when it's with a wrist that's straight and over the top on it. So, like Bieber, as we were talking about with him before, being very north south. That's a better arm action for the splitter. You don't really want to be at 3/4 for it. It's just not going to get the tumbling action that you really want. It's going to get more of that sideways action, which isn't going to, it's not going to move as much as you want, the whole thing.
Yeah, I did ask a pitching coach about that. And he said that there's like a variation on split finger where you curl your index finger.
Okay.
And if you think about it, the more you curl that index finger, the more it becomes a circle
change. Right. Yeah, exactly. And that's why you normally see circle changes from a lower arm slot.
Right. but it just sort of points out the sort of squirrely line between split fingers and changeups.
Yeah, right.
Just imagine you have the split finger and then you curl a little bit, or you curl a little bit, or you curl a lot, and then it's not a split finger anymore. So.
That's so funny. You were saying, like, curling your finger. Oh, you're going to the circle change. I got you.
But the Edutronic, like, you know, using high resolution imaging, what you can do is curl the finger a little bit, throw one. Let's look at the video.
Yeah, right.
How's it coming off? How's it spinning?
Oh my gosh.
No, we don't like that. Curl it more.
Even have video of myself in college pitching. Okay.
And then there's people who have just video of every single pitch their pitchers threw
in slow motion, you know, coming off your index finger. It's unbelievable.
But I kind of believe in Hauk. I want to. Cutter's my favorite probably in the group, but
yeah.
I think and you know, the circumstances, and this is not usually what we talk about, but this is sort of a fancy thing, is just like the opportunity is there.
Oh yeah. That's
Giolito's out, and it's not like they have
Cooper Richard Criswell Fitz
and Cooper Criswell.
And Jake Winkowski.
Yeah. But I don't see, you know, so just to speak sort of opportunity, two of those guys have options. I think.
I'm gonna assume so.
Fitz, I know, has options. So I'm just sort of assuming that Fitz goes down, you know, at first attempt.
Yeah.
Criswell was a Ray, wasn't he?
Yep. And what's so weird is that my doppelganger.
I don't know how he ended up on Boston, though. Do you?
Yeah. Craig Breslow, my doppelganger, said that he kind of looked like him. That's what the entire Discord said. Oh, man. We haven't been in the same room together, apparently. But he was saying that Criswell is very much in the case for the starting rotation. And I'm translating that as, okay, you are the sixth when you need something. He's a weird one to me. I mean, he's kind of another like sinker slider, but not really like the refined starter in my view. So, yeah, I mean, he's probably going to be their long relief is my guess.
Sinker slider cutter change. Is he low slot with a sweeper?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I'm seeing him, but the thing is like, it is low, but also he's really tall. He doesn't have that super flat. He's one of those scrunchers, is what I like to call them.
I could see Criswell taking the five from Whitlock.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not feeling Whitlock so much.
I want to see the next start from Whitlock. Like, two of them was what, like three innings, six
days. Look at that, though. 20% swing strike rate for Whitlock.
And then the last start wasn't as good. But I'm wondering if that was him just exploring his curveball or something like that. And I think the next start is him being like, okay, I'm going to go four in this one, and it's going to be everything.
There's not a lot of guys who are sinker, changer, slider though.
Right.
You know, what's your hard pitch against lefties?
Yeah, Michael King is trying to do that with his four-seamer. Yeah, I'm with you. This is why I've been out on Brady Singer for ages.
Yeah, I offended Brady Singer, I guess.
Is that right?
Yeah, by accident.
Oh, no. Brady Singer apparently was having like a sweeper or something like that.
Yeah, no, I expressed some surprise that he had 17 IVB on his four seam.
Oh, that was... And he was like... should be like, cool, that's excitement, surprise.
He like reached out through PR and like...
Oh, no. Well, Brady Singer, we all want you to be dope. We're just trying to talk to you to be dope.
And I think that the four seam and the sweeper actually could be cool, because like the four seamer is a little bit more for lefties,
mm-hmm.
and the sweeper is a little bit more for righties.
Yeah, and the slider that he currently has, I think, is too plain.
I think it's more.
I mean, it's more gyro than the sweeper. I just always assumed it was just kind of that, but I guess it is more of that typical gyro one. And there were stretches last year where that thing was so perfectly spotted.
Mm-hmm.
It was just that you just throw all these sinkers over the plate. And yeah, sure, it's a high CSW, but like, at what cost? Strike minus ICR doesn't like you, you know, because those get hurt. Those get damaged.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't matter if you get to 0-1, if it's still a hit, right?
Yeah.
So figuring out something else to throw in there is a big deal. And man, if he has 17 ABB on his four-seamer, I think he has a generally flat angle, I would think, to get that kind of ride on the sinker.
Yeah, I liked him. That was before his last start wasn't so great.
No, that was a rough one. for Brady Singer. But I mean, who else, you know, who else have you been noticing as someone that could be jumping up your boards?
Maybe we should take a break.
I was going to have Adam put one in at the 20, and then we're going to do one at the 40.
Okay.
I'm glad you noticed, though. That's good. I was like, oh, shoot.
Well, from one kind of rotation trying to figure itself out to another in the same division, you know, the Yankees got some important news this week.
With
Gerrit Cole going on the IL. And, you know, we talked with Warren last week, and I've got a piece coming out this week where Andrea, you know, Andrea Scout Girl on Twitter. Oh,
yeah. Absolutely.
And I sort of exchanged like numbers and scouting on each player. And mm-hmm. we got Will Warren in there. I think he's ready, and he's pitching well, and we've talked about him. But we have a new contender for that fifth starter role in Luis Gil.
Yes, you agree that he could actually get it, please, in some way? Please. He's so good.
He does have an option left, so you know, no. they have a way to weasel out. But A, he just looks dominant. And
oh my gosh.
I wouldn't be surprised if they find a way to put him on this roster, like between the bullpen and the starting rotation. There are these new pitchers that are like six starters, but they're in the bullpen, I guess, swing men. But mm-hmm. that sounds like kind of derogatory. I think it's an important role these days.
Well, right. It's long reliever. It's the, the savior role.
The starting pitcher just got injured, or we need to push him a day, or he gave up two in the first and we feel like we can score runs today.
Or we need to give guys extra rests all of a sudden.
Yeah, exactly. So, and like Luis Gil is coming off of Tommy John. He only had four innings last year. 2022, he only had 25 innings. 2021, looks like close to his high watermark. He had 100 innings. So asking for 100 innings out of him this year would be a lot, I think. So if you're going to get 75 to 80 innings out of somebody and they're going to be really good innings, you may just decide to put that on your major league roster, you know, because
that's interesting.
He's not going to be a workhorse starting. The only other option is, oh, you think, well, we could get 30 innings out of him in April and May while we lost, you know, if it's like a short-term injury for Gerrit Cole.
Right.
Maybe you just stick in Luis Gil, you know, for two months, and then you send him back to the minors where he manages his innings and he starts every eighth day or whatever. But I could see this guy making the major league roster. One thing that I really like is he's kind of a throwback now at this point to like really high vert, you know, really high velo. He was hitting hundreds out there. One thing that was kind of cool though was he was also throwing 96s, 97s.
Yeah.
So, and I saw this a little bit today from Jack Flaherty. The velo wasn't great for Jack Flaherty overall, but he hit 96 for the final fastball in a lot of at bats. So, in an 0-2 count, he would throw 96. Earlier in the count, he'd still throw 93. Maybe that's he's finding some way to like have a certain amount of bullets.
Yeah.
Gil had something similar where if you looked at the highlights, there's this one highlight where it looks like he's just throwing 100 the whole time.
Yeah, right. That's, and you, thanks, and you, Ninja.
It's the one where you just see his eight strikeouts, and it's like, whoa, he just threw 100 the whole time? What the heck? You watch the game, and he was throwing 96, 97,
right.
And ramping up to 100, which I like. That's a four-mile-an-hour difference.
I'm with
you. Two-mile-an-hour difference is like more stressful for your elbow than four, so... Maybe he's finding that like I'm gonna sit 96, 97. That's enough. And then oh, here comes 99, 100. Verlander used to do that when he was in his peak.
Exactly what I was thinking of. Rodon, honestly, in his prime, he would start 93 to 95 and then get up to like 99 by the end. And that was one of the impressive things about him was that he would just find it and get it. You know,
but
it was great.
He'll also stuck out to me because he's vertical. So he's vert, and then he throws a gyro slider. It's like 89 off of that. Both of them in tangent together, like they really, it looks good. That's a really good thing. I do think that people with that combination sometimes struggle to find the next thing, which is what's the third thing? What's the third?
Well, he has it.
a big curve, or in his case, he has a changeup.
And, 8 for 12 strikes.
But it, he, nobody swung at it. So what it is it's sideways. He has this one, everything is vertical, and then it's this one pitch that's sideways.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't decide from the one viewing if he can command it, but I can tell you what he is trying to do with it. He's trying to get called strikes with it.
Yeah.
He threw it 0-0 like three times.
That's so good.
So it's interesting to think, like, here's a third pitch that doesn't fit your arsenal. It's a little bit like the Ryan one, right? Like horizontally doesn't fit your arsenal. People will see it. Like if you're standing out there against heel and then one pitch just goes flying at you or away from you, be like, that's a changeup, you know? Right. And so what do you do in that situation? Do you just turf it? Other people have turfed it. Like Bryce Miller is like, I had that with my sweeper. You know, I can't get a lot of use out of that. Cause you have to be able to command it. But if you can command it, then you use it for called strikes.
Yeah. Then it's then a, you start then to it's make an Alex honor. Cobb first pitch curveball essentially.
Yeah.
And that's great.
Then they have to honor a different shape too, because
they're
like, oh, that's a changeup, but he kind of gets that in the zone sometimes.
Not to mention if you're throwing, you know, 100 at times, you know, they're going to still, they don't have time to wait for it to move in that direction.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, it's different when it's like Joe Ryan at like 92, 93, but when it's at like 97, 98, these guys are gearing up for this. And now they need to honor the fact that they, especially they see an early in a bat that like, this fastball I'm seeing now, I don't actually know if that is going to be that or not.
He's definitely able to get it, like to get the right mechanics on it without having it be the bottom of the zone. Like you see some people talk about, like I was talking to Jordan Hicks about a sinker and he was like, I don't know if I can throw high sinkers because it doesn't, mechanics don't work the same.
Sure.
My evidence for this is actually kind of maybe funny evidence, but he almost hit Trey Turner in the face with a 0-0 changeup.
Oh my gosh.
And then he went back and he doubled up on it.
Yes. That's exactly what you're supposed to do. Not enough pitchers do this. And it drives me up the wall. You have the best reference point for you just failing. Great. Like you don't try it again in 5 minutes when you forget the reference.
Yeah.
Do it now, you know,
and especially in spring training when you're like working on all your pitches, like go find that release point. Like,
yeah. Get it right.
That
now.
One didn't work. Get it right. Yeah.
The adjustment.
And the next one was 90 mile an hour takes, you know, strike one.
Great.
So it's really interesting. I like this guy. I immediately went to like, you know, three different leagues and was like,
Jordan Hicks or Heal?
Luis Heal. I was like, is Luis Heal available in these leagues?
Yeah. I mean, I am in the camp that thinks that, like, look at the Yankee rotation right now. Okay. So Cole is out. I'm going to say it's till the All-Star break because that's just how I function. I hear at least 1 to 2 months.
He's going to Neil Atrache, dude.
Yeah. So it's like either Tommy John or it's going to be a forearm strain where he's out until like July, August or something like that. Right. That kind of stuff. So, all right. The Yankees already have now four guys. And when we thought about the Yankees being like, well, we're going to need Will Warren and Clayton Beter and Luis Heal, it wasn't to replace Cole.
It was just to have a fifth starter.
Rodon
and Nesper, Rodon. You know? Yeah.
And like Stroman has injury history, even though hopefully he's okay with his hip and stuff, right? So I think of those prospect guys, unless they're going out and getting Dylan Cease now or they're signing Blake.
And one of them has to be the fifth starter now. So definitely the other one is the sixth starter. So.
Yeah, so what I'm getting at is whoever gets that role, I wouldn't be surprised if they're just there. And there's always going to be something going on that's going to keep them around. So generally, I mean, you know this better than I probably, when it comes back to guys returning from Tommy John. Traditionally, what I've seen is like 130 to 140 innings is what they get out of them. Is there a reason to not use those in the majors for Luis Heal, right?
That's what I'm saying. I think the number might be a little bit lower for him because it's been pretty aggressively low innings totals, but it does seem like the quality is so good that you might as well just get him in the major leagues.
And is there a feeling in the majors now about less babying than before? Especially, like, I haven't really seen someone get limited at 100 before as a starter, you know? And I think back this, like, this must be crazy or something, but I don't know. I feel like in high school, I threw around like 80 innings to 100 in a season. And it's just
I think there's been less babying coming off of Tommy John. I would say generally the trend in baseball is more babying. Fewer fewer pitches per start and fewer innings overall.
Right. So I don't know. There's a feeling that I have of like, all right, whoever gets that role, they're just gonna be like, we need you, please. Oh my gosh, for the Yankees, and oh my gosh. Right. We're just gonna go into this and not try to overly protect as much as possible. Especially Will Warren and Clayton Biederside too, whoever gets that job. I know there's Chase Hampton there too.
Luke Weaver's hurt.
Yeah, Weaver's. Oh, that's another one. I was like, right. Yeah, Weaver's already.
And Weaver could have been the sixth starter on the roster. Yeah,
that was really just like a bulk 3-4 inning thing. Yeah. I don't think they would have ever truly leaned in on that. That was just been like a until we feel comfortable with the prospect to take over. But now, I mean, Will Warren, I watched it. I wasn't that impressed. Hmm. It's fine.
You didn't think that the four seam was firm enough and the.
Yeah, it's like it works. It's a major league starter, guys. I'm not saying that he won't be. I think the Yankees, if they make it Will Warren, he's gonna be fine. I get a sense that like the Yankees are in kind of, I don't know, what Zips had been the third highest win total or something like that. And I feel like the Yankees are already just saying, it's gonna be a lost season already. So we gotta put on
these Yankee fans
judging and Cole getting hurt like the same week. Are you kidding?
Yeah.
So yeah, they're gonna maybe push the panic button a little and say, you know what,
the panic button might be heel.
Right, that's what I'm saying.
I think heel is like a little bit more like there's more strikeouts this spring. He's like,
right, they're just like, let's just put in heel. All right, we gotta do something. So I'm a fan. I really am. I have another guy that I want to bring up. But before we do, we have to take a quick break. Okay, so this week we've gotten a taste, you know, of some young, exciting pitchers. And I did want to talk about more on top of Luis Gil and the Will Warren situation with the Yankees. But there are three that are coming to mind. I'm sure there's a fourth or a fifth that are in this kind of package of just excitement down the road that we could see pretty soon. So the first one is Jared Jones, who had two innings for the Pirates. And my interpretation of him was obviously a super overpowering four-seamer, a knee-buckling slider, but or really a cutter, whatever you want to call that. But without, you know, he didn't walk anyone, and yet the command was a little weird. It was like effectively wild, essentially. They couldn't make good contact anything in the zone, but he was tugging a lot of fastballs out of the zone. It was very rushed mechanics a little bit. It wasn't this smooth delivery that I was hoping for. Some of the sliders came out of his hand really bad. They were up high, but then the perfect ones were so good. It wasn't like a Joe Boyle situation, but it was a little odd because I'd seen 240 innings in the minors of a sub 10% walk rate. Then again, zero walks here. Is this like a Tyler Glasnow guy where it's just enough in the zone and it works? Are the Pirates going to use him as a starter? Are they going to use him as a reliever? He's not on the spring breakout team. I don't really know what to make of Jared Jones right now. And I'm kind of curious to hear where you're at with him.
Yeah. I mean, they just keep signing veterans to stick in front
Eric
of
him. Lauer, right? Let's go.
Yeah.
Chase Anderson.
Oh, really? That too?
Three innings yesterday, shutout for the Pirates.
Oh, good Lord. I mean, I have like among the rookies, you know, I think Skeens is going down, but I think he'll come back pretty fast.
Yeah.
And I have Jones among the more exciting prospects in baseball.
100%.
And Pirates has Jones getting the fourth most innings. Fangraphs has him getting the fourth most innings on the Pirates. I think he's definitely ahead of Quinn Priester, you know, among the young guys.
Yeah, that's a new slider for Quinn. A little better precision, but everything else is still just falling behind.
And I think there could be some sort of sorting through the veterans that happens. They're all on one-year deals.
Yeah.
Martin Perez, Marco Gonzalez, Eric Lauer, Chase Anderson. They're on one-year deals. Bailey Falter is like the young player version of a one-year deal. I don't know what deal he's on, but they're not going to worry too much about it.
Right.
If they need to move on. So
then there's Luis Ortiz, who doesn't have enough command. Ronzi Contreras isn't quite back to 2022 yet. Maybe today we see something new, but I don't.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough, and you'll even see Ronzi, I think, losing Velo within a game.
Yeah,
I was watching. So, like, he's in the young player that we're excited about group, and he's the head of that, other than Skeens. So it's like Skeens, Jones, and then Priester. I think he's ahead of, like, in terms of like upside, he's way ahead of like Luis Ortiz, Quinn Priester, you know,
without a doubt. Oh yeah.
You know, Bailey Falter. I'm just throwing him on there. Like, you know, all those guys, Ronzi Contreras, in terms of like what he would do right now, I guess that's their concern early in the season. So I guess what I'm sort of working out in, you know, verbally is maybe he's not going to make the opening roster because they've signed all these veterans.
Yeah.
And they can say Jared needs to work on X, Y, or Z. The numbers kind of match what you're saying, which is strange. The fastball command is there.
Hmm.
The location plus is good. The breaking ball command is not there.
Hmm.
And I like, what's the comp for this? Like,
so it's a think fastball slider,
breaking balls, but does not command them.
I'm Matt Brash.
But does he command
better fastball with Jared Jones? Way better fastball.
And does he command his
It's a different kind of break.
Brash doesn't command his fastball either. This is what I'm saying.
Watching it. I mean, I don't know how much data you're talking about if it was just those two innings for location plus. Because if it's longer, that would rest my worries a little bit. Just because that in that one game, I'm like, sure, it could easily be, hey, spring training, max effort, doing all that kind of stuff. This is only
Blake Snell, 89 location plus on the slider.
Oh, Kevin Well, that's Boston, yeah.
But yeah,
Blake Snell, sub 50% strike rate on the slider. It was like 40%. I think it was like the worst of all sliders. But he didn't throw it in the zone at all. He was always just a chase pitch and he didn't really care. He always threw in two strike counts, you know?
Max Fried, poor location plus on the slider last year, but he was injured. Carlos Rodon, 92 location plus on the slider last year.
Mm.
Oh, that was the problem. He couldn't look at anything.
Yeah. It was, it's interesting.
Alex,
I'm thinking
Wood.
Also like Blake Snell, the four seamer I don't like as much as Jared Jones's.
Alec Manoa. Oh no.
No, that's not it. Stop.
Is
don't
that
worry.
What's going on here?
No, absolutely not. Manoa does not have Jared Jones's four seamer.
Well, that's true.
I'm going to start at it with just a four seamer and trying to find some help. Like, you might even say that early Spencer Strider is actually what I got from it.
Mm.
Because Spencer Strider didn't quite have the slider as good as it is now. And I remember actually seeing Spencer Strider in 2022 in spring. This is when I knew nothing about prospects. Like, I give props to Neil Vita as I'm watching through spring training games. He's like, go to Spencer Strider. I'm like, who, what? I don't know. And I put him on and he's throwing like 100 and it's not going anywhere he wants, but like, it's really cool.
This is a good comp because he's a baby Strider.
Yeah.
Christian Javier. Hey,
yes.
Christian Javier.
Oh yeah. Javier's four seamer command is unbelievably good. It's kind of wild.
And I don't know. Jones shows in my in AAA and here the location plus on the four seam is pretty good.
Well, that's actually really encouraging to me.
I think that's okay. I mean, I think you can just get ahead with the four seam if it's actually a good enough four seam. It is an elite four seam.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
And so I think he could just get ahead with the four seam and scattershot the slider. It's going to reduce maybe his strikeout rate upside a little bit and inflate his home run and walk rates a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still positive. That's an interesting scouting report because it lines up with the numbers and it worries me a little bit. Plus when you start looking at that roster and what they're doing, it makes me think maybe he's not going to open the season with the team.
It's also that Jared Jones, we're hoping is like the SP5, but he hasn't started a single spring training game.
So he's lining up with the B squad.
Yeah, he's doing that. And it's like, wait, hold on a second. If you're going to start, there's a whole thing about like the spring breakout and he's not included on that roster, which is a huge deal, which would suggest that they are being aggressive with him in some way.
Because they want to keep him on a reliever. They don't want to put him in that because they want to keep him on a schedule.
Mm, yeah.
Is that what you're saying? No. Like, they don't want to send him to the spring breakout because they
want that means he's not in the minors, is the idea there.
Oh. Four games, 7.1 innings is just really in between starter and reliever.
Right. Well, he's always going like two innings in these.
And you'd think that if he was going to be a starter, the next one would be three.
Come on, you don't need to do Quinn Priester anymore. Like, let's go. Let's get Jared Jones in there. Right?
Yeah, but they've loaded the roster with these stupid veterans and none of them have options.
Hey, they're really smart to be able to survive, okay? All right?
Okay. I didn't necessarily.
No, I know you did. I'm messing around. But the thing I wanted to go for here with Jared Jones is what I think is so exciting for me personally this year is I have a better understanding of all the elite pitching prospects more than ever, like dramatically so. And especially in the spring, I'm actually looking at all these box scores and all these Savant breakdowns and seeing, oh, cool, I know that guy. I know the one that I actually care about because normally it's just like all these mystery names. I'm like, who is this guy? Who cares? Mm-hmm. And now we actually have certain players that we finally getting looks at that we want to. So I'm trying to get a mental list of just the ones that I really do care about for this year. Obviously, Jared Jones is on that. Paul Skeens, duh. We know those. Okay. Job, I got to look at finally the first time yesterday. So really? Good. Oh my gosh. You know, he's the best. Good. It's crazy. If I knew that Jackson Job was starting the season in the rotation, I would have him at like 15.
Yeah,
I'm not even kidding. Because that would mean he'd get like 140-150 innings. Yeah. Is he better or worse than Yamamoto?
Yeah. Like,
I know that sounds crazy, everyone, but he is unbelievable. Commanding changeups and a 96 mile per hour cutter with a sweeper for strikes. And oh yeah, here's 101 upstairs. We had 17 to 18 inches of IVB, like vert, like what?
Yeah, another good name is Bowden Francis, who.
Oh, that's an interesting one.
He's got three innings and eight. He's got eight innings and three starts.
Well, he's the number five, though, because you have Alcmanoa delayed.
That's what I'm saying. I think he's the number five.
Yeah. I don't know how to feel about my
rankings, trying to decide how far up to push Bowden Francis for sure.
I don't know, because I mean, as a reliever last year, we saw a really good curveball that he would throw like 35-40% of the time. And then a good shape four-seamer. And I think that's kind of it. I mean, there are other things, but it was really those two offerings. Apparently, he's trying to learn Gausman's splitter. And I'm wondering if I like those two enough to really lean in. I need to spend more time watching video of Bowden Francis. I mean, it's a good opportunity because obviously it's a winning ball club.
It's a new changeup, and
yeah,
it's a good fastball shape. So
it's the curl, the split change, right?
Yeah, but I'm in on him for sure.
Other youngins that I would throw in here, Nick Nastrini. We didn't get any video. I didn't, but I saw it was three innings, seven strikeouts. I'm like, bliss. Came over in the I think the Lance Lynn deal from the Dodgers. And we're going to see him at some point this year. I mean, the White Sox are just making this their, I don't know, their daycare center. If I have a rotation, just like, all right, let's just try to make something great come out of this. And they might even get someone else from Dylan Cease, you know?
Kyle Hurt is, I think, better than a lot of the young Dodgers.
Mm.
I'm not saying better than like Emmett Sheehan or Bobby Miller. I'm just saying like the next group.
What is the next group to you? Better than Grove, yes. Gavin Stone's going to get the SP5 opportunity, and there's some hype about him because it's a really good changeup opportunity. I'm not totally sold on Stone yet because
I think upside wise, I like Hurt better than Stone actually.
Oh, I do too.
This year, you know, I don't know.
See, I'm so curious about River Ryan. Eric Loggenhagen is a big fan on him. Other prospect analysts are not as in, and what I understand is that there isn't as much polish yet. Like, he's still kind of raw in his skill set. But when I hear that, I hear normally like Joe Boyle, just mechanics and ridiculousness. That's not really River Ryan. He just hasn't had a lot of time, but athletic with generally good mechanics, I think, and throws hard and everything. He's the one that I've circled at least with the Dodgers. In that, as a youngin, and it seems like Kyle Hurt and Landon Knack are both part of that Michael Grove scene of not necessarily going to be the 5-6 inning guys for the Dodgers, but part of this crew that is cleanup.
Yeah, because Kyle Hurt did run, like, he's a high stuff, low command guy.
Yeah.
He was running some pretty bad walk rates. So those walk rates might lend him to being a reliever. Fangraphs put a 40-40 on his command.
Oh, dear.
So that's not a good sign.
No, that's only 4 years away from me. That's terrible. but no, it's so that's part of the conversation. But Nastrini with the White Sox, I'm upset because I just want video. I'm not even trying to get Statcast data. I just want to watch the dude.
Oh, I saw somebody asked you if you had a choice between video and Statcast data, which would you take?
Yeah, right. So like, I want both. I mean, sure, I'll take Statcast data more. But because the video is always so bad. If it's
if I'm able to get velocity
and a good camera angle, I'll take that all day over Statcast. 100%. I'll take that. Because I think everything I need to discern with the Statcast data, I can get if I have a good camera angle with velocity numbers. Because I can determine.
Oh my God, the worst is trying to get to understand sweep on a breaking ball from that,
Los Angeles
right
angle?
Field angle.
Yeah, it's like the Dodgers have this, the Angels have it. It's like, come on.
I can't see
this
anything.
Is worthless.
Yeah.
It's like you're on your belly in short left field. Like, that's no way to watch a pitcher.
Yeah.
That's awesome. My God. It's terrible. I'm like, oh, thank you so much, second base umpire. I'm so happy you're positioned so well for the play at second right now. it's just worthless. But yeah, so I mean, I'm waiting for this. Nastrini, I've heard good things. I think given like Soroka is, by the way, like no one talking about him, but I think Soroka could be really good for the White Sox this year. He's got all the opportunity. He used to be a command guy. Like, okay. He's going to have fun, but,
and he's switching to the four seam.
Oh yeah, that's right. I want data. Give me data, please. I need all of this stuff. Because I have no good video. It's all from the belly. but right with the White Sox, it's like Garrett Crochet trying to beat out Chris Flexen right now. And if Cease leaves, like we're going to see Nastrini somewhat soon, I think. And to me, he's someone that I need to take note of this. And the second that he gets this call up, I'm going after it. And fortunately, I would assume we were going to have AAA data in April, at least to get a better understanding of where he's at. How do you feel about Nastrini? Do you have anyone else that's kind of on that, on your radar in that way of just, oh man, when that they come up in May, this is the guy for me.
I just heard some rumblings about a young guy on the Mariners.
Really?
Logan Evans.
Oh,
he only went to, single A last year, and I think he's already been sent down because he's only had one inning in spring.
Mm-hmm.
But I've heard that the TrackMan numbers on him are bonkers.
Really?
And since he's 22, I don't know. I think he could advance. I think you'll see him at least in Double A this year. And
well, the Mariners hate to put guys through Triple A.
Right. So mm-hmm. if you see him in Double A and then somebody on the Mariners get hurt, it also is because I don't think that much of Hancock.
Yeah. He's your typical sinker, changeup, slider guy.
Yeah. Who's just like barely getting along and has to have like peak command, I think, to make it work. And then Levi Stout came back, but he's run some really bad walk rates and the strikeout rates have tumbled along with it. So I think that's a bit more of a reclamation project. So if you're like looking for, maybe it's, you know, next year's Bryce Miller or Bobby Wu, I think it could be Logan Evans.
So I'm just referring to the list I put out of the top 100 pitching prospects for 2024. This was me in preparation for just February before spring training and everything. And I'm already like, this is wrong. So like Mick Abel is someone that's very much on my list.
Oh yeah,
as a guy that quickly could come up for the Phillies. I mean, Taiwan Walker looks bad. It's really like he's like at 89 miles per hour now. And there's who's after that? Like I remember texting Ellen Adair being like, "Yo, who's the SP6 for the Phillies?" She's like, "I don't know." Like if you don't know,
Turnbull.
Yeah, right. It's Turnbull. So Nick Nelson, right? I wouldn't be surprised if Abel gets an early quick call. There's Max Meyer.
Especially if there's like, if it's Walker is just like, it doesn't work, or if there's an injury.
Yeah, I mean, it might be an injury because he's really low in his velocity right now, and it won't be the first time he's had one. Mm-hmm. I wasn't impressed by Drew Thorpe. It's the Estrada changeup and pretty much nothing else at 89 with his fastball.
And the fastball is 89?
It was 88, 89 yesterday. That's what the gun was saying.
Ew.
Yeah. And I was absolutely
shocked.
That's
not what it used to be, dude. That's not what they're
talking about. That's not what I thought, but like it was an 80 mile per hour changeup and like 88, 89 is what the gun said.
Yikes.
Yeah, that's true. Like, what? I'm not doing that. No. Ricky Tiedemann.
I saw Johnny Brito live.
What'd you think?
I liked it. He got a little rattled by like pitch clock and like, this is like more scouting than like numbers.
Well, that's the fun stuff though, right?
But like a little on edge against Mike Trout. And it's Mike Trout. So like, you know,
you're overthrowing a little bit against Trout. Yeah.
He made it through. I think he got Mike Trout out twice. Ooh. But like while Mike Trout was at bat, he had like a pitch clock violation and like allowed a stolen base. Like, cause he was like, Mike Trout.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. That's fine.
But one thing that's interesting too was it's possible he has the rare sinker that's good enough to throw to lefties. Because that's what I saw him doing. And he was able to throw his sinker high, which not everybody can do. And I know that my Stuff Plus, it doesn't look amazing on the sinker, but all sinkers are so low.
Oh, yeah.
That it's actually kind of like, it's okay.
We actually put out our preliminary PLV Stuff Plus, separating it out. And I think we made it so it's just across all pitch types, just 100 is an average across all pitches as opposed to like per pitch type.
Yeah.
That's, I think what the average is like 72 for a
72. For a there you go. And we worked hard. Like we had a bigger difference like that. And we've worked hard sort of tweaking the knobs and fiddling on the model to make sinkers better. And we still, it's like average for us is like 92 or 93. So, you know, so he has like a 97, 98, and it doesn't look that good, but it's like, actually that's a pretty good sinker. And then I talked to somebody who works for Analytics Squad on the AL East. And they said that they had Brito as one of the best run suppression sinkers in the league. So
yeah, I'm not surprised.
Curveball's good.
And the thing is too, like I've been a big proponent of Brito being like, you can blink and you can get five innings out of him.
Yeah.
Just by throwing these sinkers inside of righties. And I love the fact that Brito has been working on his cutter to lefties, which wasn't really a thing last year for him. And I look at those, all of the guys kind of circling the SP4-5 for the Padres. Brito's my favorite one.
Yeah. Because Vasquez has more pitches and like a wider arsenal, but he's
can't
more boring
as well.
He's more boring.
Yeah. Well, the sweeper is good, but everything else isn't, and he can't even like always locate that sweeper.
Mm-hmm. Brito looked more like, I was pretty impressed. And my son, my 11-year-old, we for like $40 a seat, because Tempe Diablo is not that expensive, sat 10th row exactly behind home plate.
Oh my gosh. So you're with the scouts.
Yeah, and we were literally, so my mom was with us and she was laughing because all the scouts were wearing the same brand of shirt.
Right, with sunglasses and had the gun up and everything.
Yeah, so. But it was nicer than I expected. You know, remember like Lululemon at some point was like what everybody in baseball was wearing.
Yeah, this I know nothing about this.
Yeah, so this was like some sort of more upscaley kind of thing, but they were all wearing the same one. We were laughing about that. And then I was playing the game with my son where I was like, you know, what pitch was that? You know, what pitch was that? What pitch was that? And he was pretty good. And I was like, imagine standing in against this, because, you know, you're playing Little League right now. Like, imagine standing in against this. And then after I said that, one of the next ones was like, you know, a sinker up and into a righty where they kind of like blew up off the plate. And my son was like,
it's like, oh, man. There's a famous story in my friend group of two of my best friends were twins growing up. They still are, but you know. And
they stopped being twins.
Yeah. And one of them wanted to play baseball, but the other one didn't. And the reason why the other one didn't is because he was hit in the butt. Like, he literally, it was so slow. So he knew it was going to hit him. So he turned around and he was actually like made a step away from the ball and it still hit him in the butt, right? And like that happened a second time to him when he finally was convinced to play baseball again.
He's like, that's it.
That's it. Like, I'm done. And it's like, it was a little the same exact thing, you know? And it's just like, I can't do it. And I understand that fear. Trust me, I get
you
it.
You have to get over it. Really, like, Felix really got hit again. My son got hit again last night. And he twice now that he actually see the seam.
Oh, yeah. But that's my dad. I was throwing a bullpen to my dad. And he couldn't see. I was throwing a two-seamer. And I got right in his chest. It was just a boom. And it was that. This was like when I was a senior in high school. And I was like, Dad, you shouldn't be catching. He's like, no, I got this. Like, boom. There it was. Like, oh, no. Okay, we're done. And he went to, you know, we went to Cape Cod that summer. And he's on the beach. And literally the bruise showcases the sea of the seams. I carried for all 3 weeks he was there. It's just imprinted.
You got him good.
Oh, my gosh. It was, I mean, that was my two-seamer. It was good. You know? It moved a ton. All right. Oh man. Burrito's a fun one. I think he's great there. I'm not as impressed with Thorpe, unfortunately. I have not really seen much of Robbie Snelling. That'll be interesting to see when that happens.
Ricky Tiedemann. I thought his quads were nice.
There you go. Hey, you want lower body?
No, I mean he used, like, when I saw a little bit of him, he used all his pitches. He didn't look like he looks like a guy who can throw 180 innings. Like, he just
Robbie Snelling.
Yeah.
Mm. Oh, you say quads as in like the quadrant of the zone?
No, like his quads.
Okay, it actually is quads. I didn't know if you were... I was like, that'd be actually interesting. I really like his quads. Like, oh yeah, he's going around the zone a ton. Yeah,
he had nice big quads. Like, he just he looked like a workhorse. Like, he looked like, I don't know if there's any validity to any of this, but I didn't have any Statcast. So I was just watching him. He mixed his pitches. I think he used four pitches when I was watching him. Just looked the part.
Yeah, just felt comfortable, right?
Yeah, looked comfortable.
That's how I say it is,
like, not at all rattled by any of it. Like, looks like he expects to pitch in the big leagues this year.
Right.
And
that's a good takeaway.
So that confidence is, it's interesting because I've made the mistake on the very far end, on the other end, with he used to pitch for the Diamondbacks, and he had good stuff, like almost like it was like proto stuff when I was doing early stuff.
Like Taylor Widener or something like that, or
no, his command was so bad he flamed out. Like, he tried to come
Zach
back.
Zach Godley.
It is the Godley. D-backs, it's around then, but okay, so let me see here. Teams 2023.
Yeah, this looks good.
When did Chase Anderson come up?
That was the Brewers 2015.
No, 16? Chase Anderson.
Well, I'm thinking when he actually exploded, then, right?
No,
like, that's when he opened up for the Brewers and had the like super that had the increased velocity, I think, with Jimmy Nelson that season.
Yeah.
I don't remember. Going to
2019 Diamondbacks players pitching.
Tommy Henry. No, not Tommy Henry. Who was the guy who threw the
no-hitter
then?
Okay, Bradley was one of them. They had the three young guys. They had Archie Bradley.
Delgado? No.
Zach Godley. Yeah, this is the group. Oh, man.
This is stuff we won't edit out of the podcast, guys. You got to understand how much he goes through. Okay?
Anyway, he had like good stuff, but he had like zero mound presence, and nobody wanted to pitch behind him. Nobody wanted to play behind him. Ruby De La Rosa, but it's not him. It's that year. Let's see here.
I'm completely drawing a blank. I'm not no help whatsoever. As you figure this out, I'm going to talk about Ricky Tiedemann because I've hinted at him twice. I'm sure people are like, oh my God, Ricky Tiedemann. Then we just don't do it. I don't like him as much because I see a chaotic pitcher. His four-seamer and breaking ball do look good. I didn't really see a good changeup when I saw him pitch, but I see a guy that's like a traditional slinger that doesn't feel like he's in command. It wasn't also like the 99 miles per hour that I used to see. And it's more like a 95. He also has an injury history I don't like. The Jays are probably going to wait for him because they have like Mitch White as SP7 right now, or 6 behind Bowden Francis as well. You could even see Yariel Rodriguez at some point. Like, they don't feel like they need to rush Ricky Tiedemann yet. So I'm kind of out on Tiedemann. When he does come up, I feel like it's going to be a guy that carries the shag rug, the young men's floor of rookies, where it's just like, okay, you generally, because you're a rookie, you're going to be more volatile, but he's really going to carry it. And you're going to feel like you're getting some FOMO. It's going to be like the Taj Bradley of last year, essentially, is my point. And so I'm kind of out on Ricky Tiedemann, even though I initially had him pretty aggressively.
Alan Webster.
Yeah, I was never going to get that. Absolutely not.
He had, like, I'm just eyeballing it, like 700 innings in the minor leagues, 100 innings in the major leagues with a 14% walk rate and a 14% strikeout rate and a 12% walk rate.
Oh, that sounds fun.
He was
so Tyler Chatwood.
He came up with a 95 mile an hour fastball and a 13% swing strike rate and looked like somebody who could get it done. I thought he was going to get a real chance in 2015 in Arizona. And he just had minus mound presence. Like, he just looked like he wasn't going to get the out. You know,
body language is a huge thing. Yeah.
He just looked nervous and sad and like, just, I don't know. And I don't want to ever discount that after that one, because I was like, you know, everyone was telling me that I was an idiot for thinking this guy's going to be good. And they were right.
Yeah. That's always a fun
thing. Tiedemann, I like from a sort of statistical standpoint, and
right.
But the innings are so low, and I kind of just worry that there might be some relationship there between the types of pitches he throws and the way he throws and in injury. Not like he throws this one pitch, so therefore he will get injured.
It's just that there's an intensity that might be assigned to it, or just kind of like the wildness that's all
it's
connected.
A pretty unique-ish slot to throw that hard.
Yeah.
You know, and then if you combine slot and body, not a lot of people like look like him and throw from that slot. I guess it's Salish. Like, he's kind of small, but he's not tall.
Yeah, I think the term is Gaelish, by the way, or Gaelic.
Short Sale.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny, is like Chris Sale, by the way, does not have good. I thought he would have better height adjusted BAA. It's like average. I thought he'd be like really flat with it, but I think it's just too tall.
Oh, that's interesting, because the IVB is pretty good.
Right. I mean, well, it's like slightly above average, I think. Mm-hmm. Which I'm like, wait, hold on.
I thought he was low release point with.
Yeah, good, right. I thought IVB. It would be. I guess
it's not that good.
It's not as much, at least according to us. I don't know.
That's fine.
Maybe he's getting it back or something like that. I'm not too sure. But anyway, I have to run. Mm-hmm. And we could do this for a very long time and think about Alan Webster and all the Webster dictionary jokes I'd make. Yeah, look up mound presence in the dictionary. It's Webster. But I'm going to see you in a week. The Other Half Brewery.
Other Half Brewing. Live podcasts.
And also
barrels,
watching the Korea game.
20 and 21st. We're going to just put the Korea games on in the afternoon, because those will be done. But we'll just have them on TV during a meet and greet. Have some beers. Live podcast with live Q&A.
Yeah.
So it's going to be fun.
Sounds amazing. Starts at 5 p.m. Is that right?
We'll be there from 3 on, and the podcast is at 6.
Oh, beautiful. All right. So I'll be there at 3 on.
There you go.
But that's it.
And
so that's the Other Half Brewery in Williamsburg.
Sandwiches.
Sandwiches. There we go. Yes. You're going to see all the photos. It's going to be like a red carpet event of us as we eat our sandwiches. Ooh, and
what
then
I wear?
Wait to Eno, and he'd be like, 6 out of 10. It's going to be such a good time. I'll be there, of course, on Wednesday. I won't be there on Thursday. Do it again on Thursday. You should absolutely be here for that. I'll be on a flight, sadly. But I am looking forward to that next week. And, you know, it's always really fun having you here on the podcast. So on the behalf of Enosaurus, my name is Nick Pollock, and we'll talk about the craft again next week.